2026 Decoding Aggression and Reactivity Summit, created by my friend Ness Jones, launches April the 19th and 20th. She's brought together more than 10 professionals from around the world, myself included, to help you understand what's really going on underneath aggression and reactivity, and how to support your dog in a way that actually creates change. You'll get access to over 12 hours of education, real-world application, and conversations that go far beyond surface-level training advice. Plus, you receive a workbook and a gift from each of the speakers. For $47, you can't find that anywhere. Check the link in the show notes or go to dogspeak101.com to our event page to find our special link. Dog Speak Geeks. Yeah, I'm just going to have to go back to the regular introduction. I just feel like it's the most natural thing for me. Hey, happy holiday week with Thanksgiving just a couple of days away. I hope you guys have some great plans. Listen, before I even get into this episode, please keep your dog safe during Thanksgiving. There are a lot of things that dogs should not be eating, and there are a lot of things that dogs should minimize their intake of, and that is those fatty foods that you get at Thanksgiving. So just please keep your dog safe, keep an eye on them, and not just for gut health issues, but also please keep your dog safe from stress, anxiety, too much interaction, too much stimulation. Be sure you give your dogs an opportunity to take a break, decompress, and relax. If you are traveling with your dog, do your best to kind of stick to those predictable patterns that you have, and be sure your dog is getting an opportunity to get some solid rest. It's very important. I will be traveling this week. I'm actually recording this on Saturday, and I am leaving tomorrow and heading down to Savannah, Georgia, and Tybee Island. So Willow and I will be down there for the week. If I have any listeners there, you want to meet up and buy me a coffee or a beer, hey, shoot me an email. I will still be working a little bit. I'll be meeting with any clients that want to meet, and I'm planning on meeting with a client while I'm there. But just really going to have some downtime, get some work done, and hopefully meet some of the listeners. And I'm looking forward to just kind of getting back to just walking a lot. And that just Tybee Island's so easy to walk, and love Savannah. So I'm excited about that. And I will be spending Thanksgiving with just Willow. So it's going to be, I think, a really good relaxing time. Don't have any plans for a big dinner. I'll probably just have myself some lobster ravioli or something. Who knows? But I hope you guys do have some wonderful plans and enjoying this holiday season. I have one more announcement. You guys have listened to the episode with The Infinite Unfolding and Lisa, who is a life coach. She has hooked up with a somatic healer, and they are putting together a somatic healing webinar. And it is going to be just amazing. This is going to be in December. Basically, they're going to be talking about what your amygdala is, the vagus nerve, insulin, and what's happening when you're anxious, numb, or overwhelmed. As you guys have listened to us enough, we talk so much about stress and anxiety and trauma, and really that we need to make sure that we are healing ourselves as much as we are helping to heal our pets. And also, they're going to talk about things of why you can't just calm down no matter how many, you know, deep breaths you take, and how to start kind of using movement as something to assist with your healing. It's going to be, I believe, it's going to be just an amazing webinar. I will be on there. My wife is going to be on there. And I think it's going to be fantastic. And I really hope to do some more with Lisa and The Infinite Unfolding, and a little bit more about somatic healing and how we can use that with dogs. So let's look forward to that. But I'll put the link in the show notes so you guys can get a ticket. I think it's going to be a phenomenal webinar. So I highly encourage you to grab yourself a ticket. And I don't think they're very much. Let me look and see. But I think that they are, oh, look, they're only $50. It's December 14th, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And it's the Intro to Nervous System Regulation via Somatic Movement Practices. So it's going, I think it's going to be fantastic. So please make sure that you sign up for that. Would love to see you guys on there. I think it's going to be fantastic. Okay, so I want to get into nature versus nurture. That's what I want to talk about today. Now, I'm not going to go to a deep dive. This is a holiday week. I wasn't even going to record, but I thought, you know what? Let me just get this one out there because I've been thinking about it a lot. Was going to record this a couple of weeks ago, and it just didn't happen. You know, things happen, and sometimes it just doesn't feel right. And I really want to make sure that I'm got the right feelings when I'm putting an episode out. Otherwise, it's just going to come off a little dry. And I really want you guys to grasp the information that I share with you, because I do believe it's going to help you become a better owner, as well as help your dog just do better living in this world and in this life. So nature and nurture, the two sides of your dog's story. And if you're like me, you know, a couple of decades ago, all you heard was, it's all in how you raise them, right? There are no bad dogs. It's all in how you raise them. And unfortunately, that is a common myth that's out there, because it isn't in just all in how you raise them. Because that's basically saying that we control every aspect of a dog. And that's just not the truth. You know, just like us, we have, you know, our genetics, we have our learning history and what we learned growing up. And we also have kind of that innate desire that's there that we may not be able to even put our finger on of the reason behind it. We just know that that's how we feel. And nature and nurture, it's an important thing that we look at and to understand that sometimes your dog's behavior isn't because you did something wrong. It could be that your dog's genetics are just struggling. When we are talking about dogs and their genetics and, you know, kind of what do they come into this world with? And yes, we do look at dogs as kind of those breed specifics. What are they naturally bred for? What were they used in the real world for? Were they a herding breed to herd up livestock and keep them, you know, safe to where we put them in their pens at night? Or do we have a livestock guardian who have protection over free roaming sheep or goats, or, you know, whatever it is that the farmer may have? Those two different jobs need two different types of skill. And those dogs were bred specifically for the skills needed for that. So if we look at like livestock guardian, their hearing is exceptional. Their hearing is exceptional because they have to be able to hear any type of predator. But also, like most dogs, their senses are heightened specific to that job. So their nose is going to work really well. However, their genetics also make them very lazy. And I'm going to put that in air quotes. They're lazy in that their job consists of patrolling and then laying down and just watching and waiting. Whereas you have a dog whose job is to herd, well, that dog is going to be a lot more aroused around movement. They're going to use their mouth more. And those dogs are going to be easier to train than, say, a guardian, because the guardian dog was bred to guard the livestock and not necessarily work alongside a human. Your herding breeds were bred to work alongside a human. So they're easier to train. So when we look at this, you know, if you have a dog who's genetically like a Great Pyrenees that wasn't bred to take instruction from you or work alongside of you, then you have to understand that their behavior is not because of lack of training. Their behavior is simply what they are. Now, you can feed or starve some of these genes. We can do things to keep these genes from kind of expressing themselves. But some of them are just so big. And that's the way I like to explain it. It's like these genes are so big that no matter what you do, you can't get rid of them, right? So if you have like a herding breed, I don't care what you do, you're not ever going to get rid of the desire to chase something and nip something. Can we teach those dogs there's an appropriate time to do it versus an inappropriate time? Yeah, we can. But we have to understand that that is a genetic predisposition they have. And this is why I think it's really cruel when we use aversive techniques and positive punishment, where we're adding something painful to decrease a behavior. I think that's kind of cruel. That's saying that, yeah, I know you were bred with that, but I want you to live in an apartment with me. So I'm going to use a shock collar because that's what's easiest for me. And that's really selfish, right? That's why a lot of times people resort to using positive punishment like e-collars and shock collars. It's because a behavior that their dog is doing is inconvenient or inappropriate in their setting. And instead of understanding that that may be a genetic predisposition, we just go about saying, hey, it's not appropriate, so let's extinguish that behavior. And that's not good for the overall well-being of your dog, because we really want to make sure that our dogs are healthy physically, emotionally, mentally, and that we are meeting those genetic needs. Because when we can meet those genetic needs, we are going to decrease the inappropriate use of predetermined behavior. And even though the dogs may have a predetermined behavior, it doesn't mean they are going to express it. I've seen herding dogs who could care less about chasing anything. That would just make them a really poor herding dog for the farm. And that's going to be true across the board, you know, no matter what you're looking at. There's always going to be a great version of that dog. And there's going to be a dog that's like, oh, you know, I have a lab and he just hates to swim. Yeah, that's really odd, but it's not unheard of. Now, if you have a lab who is genetically predestined to enjoy water, we can help that dog get through some of that discomfort if they don't like it at first. Maybe they don't like it because the water that they got into was super cold and they weren't prepared, or they fell in and didn't even know they were getting in the water. They could have had a negative association. There are things that we can do to nurture making that experience more positive. And so there is a part of nature and there's a part of nurture that they need to play together in order to create kind of the best world for the dog that's in front of you. Now, when we're talking about negative associations, things can happen at any time during that developmental stage, but it doesn't just stop there, right? It doesn't just stop at 1 year of age or 2 years of age. I believe that our dogs that are still kind of 3, 4, 5, many of them still have this kind of free spirit thought process to where they're still taking in so much information, but they've yet to really be aware of everything in their life. Because again, as we talked about on this episode, or excuse me, on this podcast, is that this world is changing on a daily basis. So our dogs that are now a year old, when they turn 4, this world may be something that's new for every single one of us. And our dogs may create a negative association in that new environment, because that's how kind of, life works. What we have to make sure we do is during the times that we're building this foundation and we're helping our dogs be the best version of themselves and making sure that we are nurturing the correct things that nature has given us. Because if we can nurture what nature's given us, we're going to create the best version that nature created. And, you know, on the opposite side of that, we cannot nurture what nature has given us. and we end up with a golden retriever who is human aggressive. We all know that that is one of the most uncommon traits you will find in a golden retriever. Right? So nature did not set up a golden retriever to be a protective dog, to use aggressive behavior, to, you know, deal with life. Golden retrievers are really supposed to be resilient and outgoing and really kind of side to side with a human. But if we don't nurture that and we do kind of the opposite and create anxiety and fear and unpredictability and, you know, a lack of safety, then yes, our golden retriever is going to lose kind of the nature it has, and it's going to fall on the nurture sword, I guess you could say. So I think that with nature nurture, we can create issues no matter how good nature gives us. But I've also seen that no matter how much someone tries to nurture, sometimes that nature is not in a good place. I have met puppies early on where the genetics that they had and the behavior that they exhibited was not normal. It wasn't appropriate. And oftentimes I see with these pups that no matter how much you try to take nurture and make this dog good, it just doesn't work. Because it's like trying to get a car to run, no matter how much you love the car, no matter how beautiful the car is, but trying to make the car run without putting in the correct spark plugs or putting oil in the gas tank instead of gas, because we feel like that would, you know, work better. It doesn't matter what you do. If that car doesn't have the right components, it cannot run no matter what we do. And unfortunately, that happens sometimes where the genetics are just not good. And I think this is where we get into this conversation of natural selection versus kind of human selection. When we're taking dogs that maybe have these wonderful temperaments and wonderful personalities and their nature is just absolutely amazing across the board, and we're spaying or neutering them and not passing those genetics down, what are we going to end up with? Well, we're going to end up with a lot of dogs that don't have good nature because we're breeding out the good stuff. Who's going to be breeding the good stuff? Well, this has to be breeders that are really paying attention to the natural genetics of the breed that they're breeding and ensuring that those genetics keep going down the line. Otherwise, we're going to stop having dogs that are meant for pet homes, right? It's important that we allow some natural selection to take place. I think it's important that we look at some of these dogs who have the great genes and genetics, and we don't necessarily spay or neuter them, right? We don't necessarily run out and let them get pregnant or, you know, let them impregnate someone else. But I think that there's an opportunity there to ensure that we don't end up 20, 30, 40 years down the road and we have nothing but of, you know, millions of dogs with behavior problems because their genetics are so screwed up. And that's why I'm not against breeding. I'm not against natural selection. I'm against people breeding for just the money or breeding, you know, just to be doing it, which is usually for the money. I'm not for that. I think that we have to really care about the breed that we're doing. So, you know, don't be throwing stones at the radio right now. I know that spay neuter is a huge topic and rescue organizations, but I just think that there are even dogs in rescue, that their genetics are really good. And I don't see a reason to spay or neuter them, especially when we're spaying and neutering pups at such an early age. They're losing the hormones and they're losing the testosterone and the estrogen and what they need in order to develop appropriately, really including that brain. And, you know, yeah, I'm gonna have a job for a long time because we are really, I feel like we are nurturing behavior problems because we're so stuck on spay, neuter because of our, you know, homeless pet situation, which is bad. But I think that our homeless pet population a lot of times comes from people are just not understanding who their dog is. They're not understanding what their dog needs. They don't know how to teach. They're not looking at creating that bond, and it's sometimes just too much and they can't handle it. And so they put the dog in the shelter, or you have people with health problems that they can't keep the dog. They age out of having a dog and they have to move to a, you know, a nursing home and can't take their pet with them. There are a lot of reasons dogs end up in the shelter, and they end up in the shelter more due to human errors than just too many dogs. And I'm going to stick with that. However, I do think that there are a lot of dogs that need to be spayed or neutered, but in the consensus in my brain is that we really need to start looking at spay and neuter very differently, because nature and nurture is very important. And if we're not going to take care of kind of the mishmash of dogs that we have, I don't even know what that word is, mishmash. I think I'm trying to say something else, but I'm going to leave it there. The mishmash of these different breeds to where we kind of have the common American dog with great genetics and good health and outliving these, you know, full-bred dogs that are getting sick because we've not done a good job at ensuring that the right genetics pass down the line. But I think I've kind of gotten off topic a little bit on that. And you just understand that I'm not for every freaking dog being intact, but I do think that there is a place for saying we need to not make spay neuter so common, and we need to be a little bit more decisive about why we're doing it, when we're doing it, and the type that we're doing as well. But that's, again, that's another, I guess, another episode that we need to talk about. Maybe I'll find a veterinarian who has specialized in this, on altering animals, because it is a big topic right now in the vet community. It's becoming a little bit more of a topic of when's the right time to do it. And I think that is important because it's not just about having puppies or not having puppies. It's not about roaming or not roaming or having aggression or not having aggression. It's about that their brain needs those hormones in order to develop properly and to develop the proper skills that they need to handle this crazy freaking world. Because genetically, a lot of these dogs don't have the best genes, right? They're coming from dogs that are, scared. So they're passing down this anxiety. Or while they were pregnant, they were feeling very stressed and hungry. Well, those stress hormones go right to the puppy. Right to the puppy. And, you know, so that's something that can be passed down. So dogs do learn through their environment. They might be a little bit more on edge towards something if their mom was afraid of the sound of a train, right? It could be that the first time that that puppy hears a train, something happens, it switches something inside the dog, and the dog is afraid of trains and stays afraid of trains for their entire life. Whereas the five other puppies have no problem with the train. It's really based on kind of that predisposition that they have. And when we talk about that nurture, it's, are we helping that dog through the issue? Or are we just saying, yeah, that dog's afraid of trains and there's nothing we can do about it? I think there's a lot of times things we can do about it. We just need to make sure that we're doing it at the right time and that we're not doing something about it at the detriment of the dog's overall well-being. And, you know, that's, if I have a dog who's going to bark every time they hear the train and they're barking because of fear, and then we want to, again, put a shock collar on the dog because it's barking. When the train comes by, we stop the barking, but we did not fix the fear. And so the dog is going to just increase the fear they have, as well as become more afraid at the train, even though you won't see that through barking anymore, because now you've punished it. But it's still there. Or you just got rid of the symptom of the sign, the way your dog was communicating the issue. All you did was get rid of the communication. But if we give our dogs good experience, and that nurture can be powerful to help kind of override some of these genetic predispositions or kind of just past experiences when they were early on. When we got Myers, he was rescued at, he was less than a week old. So his eyes were not open. His ears were not open. He had one sibling. They didn't know who the mother was. And I remember when we brought him home, he was close to 3 months. And we were going outside. I was carrying him outside because he was so little. But I was carrying him outside and he smelled the fire pit and had immediately started kind of climbing over my shoulder to try to get away from that smell. And we were a good probably 30 yards from it. But it scared him to death. And now I don't know the reason for that. I mean, I can't get into his brain to figure that one out. But all I know is that he had a fear of smoke. And luckily he was young enough, and it was early enough for me to start counter conditioning that and making the smell of smoke a more neutral stimulus instead of something that was going to trigger that fight, flight, or freeze. And now he's fine with it. He can be outside at the fire pit. He can be outside when we're smoking meat on the grill. And he doesn't have a problem anymore. But that was something that it came with him. There was no negative association that I know of, because I know where he went from the moment he was picked up. So unless it happened in that first, you know, 3 or 4 days of his life, I'm not sure. But could that be something that came from his mother? Right, was that something that got passed down to his mother? Of course, it could just be a breed thing. But, and I say that kind of, you know, I don't know any breeds that have a problem with smoke. But, you know, if we have a dog who absolutely flips their switch every time they see a cat run by, it could be that that dog has terrier. And anything running that fast looks like prey. And so it's an automatic response to that. It's not something where they have a negative association. I really encourage you, if you've not gotten Kim Brophy's book, Meet Your Dog, to where it breaks it down in a grouping that's more realistic on an ethological standpoint, to understand what your dog's traits are and why your dog has those traits, and, you know, what you can expect and what is natural, right? What is the nature of your dog? And then you can make those decisions of, can I nurture that, right? If you decide you want to get an Anatolian Shepherd because they're gorgeous and you met one once and you fell in love, you need to learn about the Anatolian Shepherd, and you need to learn about what nature has given an Anatolian Shepherd to see if that nature is going to fit right with you. And only when that becomes fit, right, if you can fit that together, if you can fit the nature of the Anatolian Shepherd with your environment, then we can start talking about, now you need to start nurturing that. So really you have to ask yourself, can I nurture the nature that this Anatolian Shepherd needs? And you may think, oh, God, Nikki, what is an Anatolian Shepherd? It's a livestock guardian dog, right? So they're going to be a lot like your Pyrenees. They're going to be aloof. They are going to not be as trainable as you would like them to be. They are going to be barking. They are going to want to be outside. They are not going to want to be stuck in an apartment. So these are some of those natural skills and genetics that are going to come along with that Anatolian Shepherd. So you can't just look on the outside and say, yeah, that dog is just, you know, I love the way that dog looks. I want that dog. If their nature doesn't fit with you, then that nurturing is going to become a real issue, because you're going to try to nurture things that's not there, and you're not going to nurture what that dog truly needs you to nurture. So think about what your dog right now, kind of what behavior do you see from them? What What natural behaviors do you see? What behavior comes out very easily in environments that don't necessarily have an environmental cue? Think about that and then ask yourself, am I nurturing that? Am I giving my dog what they need in those moments to meet that nature? Or is that something my dog has that it's not appropriate in my environment, so I need to find a way to nurture it elsewhere? Right? So if my border collie, I frown when they, you know, maybe starts to herd up the children next door or herd the cats. Well, I can't punish the dog for that. That's the dog doing its natural behavior. My job is to say, okay, I don't want you getting out, your desire in those situations. Let me find something else for you to do. I'm going to get a remote control car and I'm going to have you herd that. I'm going to get a big old ball and let you herd that ball. Maybe I will get a flirt pole and you can learn the flirt pole a little bit. You can herd that. I'm going to make sure I'm going to nurture that, but I'm going to do it in ways that are more beneficial for the environment and those that are in the environment. But at the same time, give my border collie what my border collie needs. Really, depending on what your dog is going to depend on what genetics you should expect. And you really need to look at that. And if you're looking at getting a new dog or you're looking at changing the breed you had, you really need Kim Brophy's Meet Your Dog book, because that's going to really help you see if a dog that you really want is the right dog for you, or if it's just not the appropriate dog at this time. If you're young, you're going to have a lot of dogs. So you're going to have many opportunities to maybe try some different dogs out. And even if you're looking for a mutt, right? If you're looking for a mixed breed dog at the shelter, you still need to know what grouping you fit with best, and then look for a dog at the shelter that has that type of genetics. You can't just go with looks. If you know you need a laid back dog, you're not very active, you don't go out very often, you're a homebody, you watch a lot of TV, you really just like to be at the house and hanging out, then you know what? You probably need a toy dog. One that just wants to lounge around the house, sit in your lap. Basically, they were bred to do nothing but sit with you. Then go find something at the shelter that has the combination of toy breeds. Right, don't go and get yourself a pit bull mix, because they're not going to want to just hang out with you in the house and not have any friends or not have a social life. That's not their personality. So I know you may love the look of a dog, but you need to respect the nature that they are. And if they don't fit in your environment, they don't fit your personality, then you don't need to be doing it. And you need to learn to nurture what the dog comes to you with, and then nurture the good manners that's going to help your dog survive in this changing world. It plays both parts. Nature and nurture is very important. Please understand too, though, and I know that people are like, I just don't want to give up on this dog, and it's a great dog, and we have to make sure we get away from the selfishness of that to where I don't want to give up on the dog, because there's a point in time where you go, it can't be about me and my feelings and about my feelings of failure. This dog there's a better place for this dog. And it might be another home. It might be in a rescue organization to where it can find, a new owner with more experience with that breed. I don't want people just sitting there trying to force a relationship because they don't want to fail and they don't want to be looked at as a failure. I don't believe that once you get a dog, you have that dog until the end of time, because sometimes it just doesn't work out. And no one should feel guilty about that. And we've got to stop making people feel guilty about that, because all we're doing is we are taking away the opportunity for the dog to live their best life. Because trust me when I say that, look, if you brought a Malinois in my home, I like Malinois, but I do not want one as a pet. And if I had one coming up in here, there ain't no way I can give it the nurture that it needs. I just don't have that much energy. I know it seems like it, but I don't. I take that back. I have that energy. I just don't want to put it towards the Malinois. Right? If I don't have the ability to nurture that and nurture what they need naturally, I don't need to be getting a Malinois. Actually, none of y'all as pet, if you're a pet owner, none of you need Malinois. They need to be worked only. And that is not saying about anything about you as an owner. It's all about what that dog truly needs, and that people that work a real job and have a real life, unless you are working alongside your Malinois or doing competitions with your Malinois, it's not going to be the right dog for you. So the next time somebody says, hey, you know what? It's all in how you raise them. No, it's not. Tell them it's not. Tell them to listen to this episode. We are not the end-all, be-all for dogs. They've existed for thousands and thousands and thousands of years without our help. And we need to respect what we did do with them when they started becoming such an important part of our human world. We bred these dogs to do these jobs, and now we're saying, sorry, there's no job for you here. So I no longer want those skills. That's not appropriate. No matter what you do, if you're over there training your herding dog to stop chasing bicycles using punishment, you're an asshole. Right? Because that's saying, look, I got you knowing what your genetics are, but I'm going to punish you because it's not appropriate for me. And I know I've already said that, but it's worth saying again, because this is a big thing for me. This is really a passionate topic for me, that I believe that if you cannot nurture the nature that that dog comes with, and I'm talking breed standards, not necessarily learned behavior or passed down behavior, right? Then we don't need to be having that dog. The behavior that's passed down, your anxiety, your fears, your phobia, your, you know, aloofness due to lack of socialization, lack of friendliness towards other dogs due to a lack of socialization, and the socialization you have had has been negative. All right, we need to make sure that we try to give our dog the correct nurture to help them overcome that, not necessarily be best friends with everyone, but to be able to live in the world being as stress-free as possible. And I probably should say, when I mean stress-free, being able to deal with normal situational stress and then have the resilience to go back to baseline, to homeostasis, just back to baseline. That's what we need to make sure that we're doing. Kim Brophy, Meet Your Dog, get the book. Check the website out. There's some free resources that she has on there. Plus, there are some great courses as pet owners, or if you're a professional, some great courses on there. And if you are a professional and you're not part of the Legs community, if you are not looking at dog behavior through an ethological lens, you need to join the Legs community, because we really focus on what that dog is through their learning history, through their environment, through their genetics, and who they are as an individual. Because let's not forget, every dog is going to have their individual genetics, their individual predetermined desires that we can either nurture or we can kind of extinguish, right? We can stamp them down and be like, nope, don't want that. But we have to make sure that if we are doing those kind of stamping out behavior, it's not taking away the welfare and the well-being of the dog. Hope this gives you a little more insight into your dog's behavior, how we need to understand it better. We need to understand that it doesn't matter how good of a pet owner you are, no matter how good of a dog owner you are or a dog trainer you are, nature and nurture have to play together. And we have to start respecting the nature more and stop thinking that we just have to nurture in order to make things great. And I think that's why when I wrote my first nonfiction book, it was When Love Isn't Enough. Because I think that we so many times just thought if we just loved a dog enough that we can make them better. And that's just not the case. It's just not the case. If you want to know more, check out our online content. We have some really good information out there. Right now, there's a 50% off code for all online content. You can get that through Thanksgiving. That is, I say through Thanksgiving, the coupon is Thanksgiving, as well as it's going to run through the rest of the month. So be sure you get that now. And if you want to give yourself something like a gift certificate, you can buy yourself a gift certificate and stick it in your stocking. Go ahead and get that online course now. Buy it for friends and family. Put it in their stocking and let them come back and have their content. So you can buy gift certificates. You can go ahead and buy the gift certificates with the 50% off. You just would need to email us for that, and I can invoice you. That way you can give some really good discounts and some really good gifts to your friends and your family, and especially to that friend or family who has that dog that drives you crazy every time you go over their house. Yeah, that's the one. So do that. All right. Hope you guys enjoy the rest of your week. I hope you do have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I hope that you are looking forward to the entire month of December, which is basically just a holiday month, let's be real. And if you have any questions, if you would like to share any stories, shoot us an email. We only have, let me look at the calendar now. We only have, oh goodness, like 4 episodes to go for this year. So if you guys have anything you want to hear, you have questions about something, please send them in. And I'll do that through one of our last 4 episodes of the year. And as I say the last 4, I may take a week or two off at the end of the year. So if you have anything you want to hear, guys, please shoot me an email and let me know. I would love to talk about what you want to hear, and I appreciate you. I love you guys, and I hope that you all have a wonderful and safe, and please keep your dog safe, Thanksgiving.